This is a recording of Ted Redsall of 15 Halbert Road, Havant, made on Tuesday the 22nd of February 2005.
Edward Frederick Redsall, born 21-12-43. The Redsalls came originally from Deal in Kent, or a place called Walmer, just outside of Deal. Grandad came up from Walmer up to London, where he met Gran, at who resided at Lily Road, which is the same road that Earl's Court is in, and they had a dairy farm there. And he was her father had died, and he was chief dairyman. They got married, and they had four children at that point: three boys and a girl. And in about 1908, there was a type of exodus to Canada, and Grandad was going to go across to Canada and start a new life there. But Grandad got it slightly wrong, because when they sold up the house and everything, and then when they turned up to board to go to Canada, he was told that he had to go out there on his own. He couldn't take the family with him. He had to go, get settled, and then send for the family. Well, Grandad wasn't going to have any of that. So it was that they abandoned that idea. He moved to Balham and then to Thacombe, where my father was born. And from Thacombe, in 1911, they moved down to New Brighton Road, Hollybank, which was also it was a farm there. And he was a dairyman for the local farmer there. They went to the Emsworth School. Three of them went to the Emsworth School, and Grandad, the eldest son, joined the First World War, and Grandad went in with him, and because as he went in with him, and it was a tied cottage, they had to when the war was over, or before the war was over, he had to get out. So he moved to Rowland's Castle at the top of Red Hill, next to the Barretts. They was there for 6 months, and then they moved down to 22 Red Hill Road, which was the old snobbing shop, and he done cobbling there. Before that, the shop, because of the large metal bars and that around the shop, it looked very much like it was a butcher's before that. Anyway, Grandad had it altered slightly for snobbing, and the word snobbing was always used by me auntie, and snobbing means boot repairs. Grandad was there until he died in 1941. He died. Gran stayed on in the back shop, and Mr. Brace took over in the middle 40s, and he converted the shop and to modernise it, so he done boot repairs. And when Gran died in 53, he took the place over, and the rest was left to the Braces. I was born in Castle Road in a place called Aldwick, which was opposite Lockwood Villas, about number 4 actually, in Castle Road. We stayed there. There was three of us at the time. Then, and because we were it was a bungalow with Nurse Oliver one side of us, and Mr. Saunders the other side. Mr. Saunders was a lived in the lodge at the bottom of Hazeldene Drive, that used to where the Merediths were. Because we was, there was opposite sexes and that, we had to move. And we moved just down the road to two airy houses, which is now 24 Castle and 26 Castle. And we stayed there. Dad died in 63, and we stayed there until my brother went to London in 59, I believe. He was an architect who was trained by Mr. Tutt up at Louvain, up Castle Road, where Kath Rookwood now lives. And he went his way. My sister Pat got married to a chap down at Farlington, and then in 68 I got married, and just before 67 my sister left home and went down to Weston-super-Mare, where she joined the RAF, where she eventually met her husband. I was married in 68 up at St John's Red Hill Church to a girl from Lee Park, Marion Rosemary Constance McLaughlin, and they were bombed out in the Second World War, and they were the first in Botley Drive when they started to build Lee Park housing estate. Just hang on. My memories, I suppose, start late 40s, when in the village there were like little local gangs. I was the youngest of a group of boys up Castle Road, and we used to look after Castle Road. You had the Red Hill and we had the Witcher's Gate, and then the ones that ruled the roost were the village gang, which a chap, Jeff Carter, still lives in the village. We was based around that. Obviously, like after the war years, we would go up and down Castle Road with sticks over our shoulders, sort of patrolling that area, and also the Haven Thicket at the top of Castle Road. The main weaponry that we had would have been bows and arrows made out of hazel, and the catapults, which were, which I suppose, slightly lethal if marbles were used or small pebbles. If it was wet, we would get up under the pine trees. There was a row of pine trees opposite King's Way before they were built. And we could get up under there, and you could practice your bow and arrows and your catapults, and you wouldn't really get wet. Yeah. The thicket was one of our main playgrounds as such, especially because in those days you had bird egg collections, and there was quite a variety of birds up there. We also used to use the upper lake, which was a connection to the lower lake, which was in Lee Park Gardens, where we used to fish and just generally mess around. And we used to go up through the top of Castle Road, more or less where the gateway is now for the fire tracks, and there would be just a little small track going right through to the upper lake. You would pass things like, at that time, the late 40s, you had the we had ponds on the way up through there, and I lost my way there. Could you just and we used to pass up through the ponds and that, and to get to the lake up the top, where we would do various things, mostly fishing and that. And in those days there would be a very old staging hanging over the waterways, where I presume there was like chalets that they used to come up from the Lee Park Gardens, and they would sit out over the water. And we used to make rafts so we could dredge the lake for the fishing and that, where the weeds used to grow out. Just down back from there, we had the charcoal burners we used to come up past, And then if you was on the way home, you might pick up, do a bit of chipping. That was the chips that they, when they used to axe the trees and that down, you would take them home, you know, for the fire. Again, when we was right up at the way there, you had the brickyard hooter. That was our main stay of getting home. It used to go at 9 o'clock in the morning, 11:45, 1 o'clock, and at 4:45. And of course, that coincided with Dad, who worked on the corporation at Lee Park and at Cosham, for the Portsmouth Corporation, that was. And that gave us about, you could always hear it on the wind, the 11:45, as soon as the whistle went, you dropped everything and you ran like hell through back to the top of Castle Road and then Castle Road, and you was basically just about on time. And the same applied at when he used to come home about 5 o'clock. We would have done the same thing then. When we used to, sometimes at night time, we would stay up and fish overnight. And again, if we caught, usually 3, 4, 5 in the morning, Cyril T, who was the main fisherman of the lot of us, if he had got a carp or tench or something, we would try and bucket it and then bring it back to the brickyard pond, where we used to try and stock that out. And then that was a quick, easy trip up through across Mr. Stratton's field to do fishing at the brickyard. And no one really got anywhere near you or touched you. To the upper lake also, you never, if you heard anyone coming up through the bracken or anything, you always knew it was one of the boys. You didn't have none of the Lee Parkers and that, which look you have now, floating around the place, and you didn't have none of that at all. No one used to appear. And occasionally, if we didn't have a lot of luck at the upper lake, we used to creep down the avenue and go down into the garden to the lake in the Lee Park Gardens and quietly sit amongst the laurels and that and do a little bit of fishing and just hope that you weren't spotted. Sorry? Lee Park House, it was Admiralty at that time, during the war. The Fritz Wigrams had it, and then Admiralty bought it off, and then from Admiralty, you know, the Portsmouth Council, hence you've got the buildings. That's right, yeah. Also, the thicket, it was quite usual back then to have at least about one complete fire a year. You would just see a mass of smoke coming from over the thicket, and you would go up with the firemen, because you didn't basically have fire tracks in those days, and you would just have a bunch of hazel and that, like a broom, and you would just join in with them and just do fire beating to put the fire out, and you could be up there almost all day. And it wouldn't be unusual to come back, and you would, though you didn't notice it, where all the sparks are dropping down onto you, you would have holes in your shirts or what you ever like to call them, and which didn't go very well when you got back at home. Also at the top of Castle Road, we had a dirt track, which basically to this day you can go up there and you can pick it out to this day, you can. And originally we used to go up Lynx Lane, where Mrs. Clark Jarvis lived, and which is now the golf course path to their storage depot and that. And there used to be a dump at the bottom of there, and we would go down there, and three or four of us would sort out old wheels. The frame, the saddle didn't matter, not really, but if you could get a frame with a pedal and a chain, and then you would just fix the wheel into the spokes of the bottom of the forks, and just do the nuts up by your hand. You didn't have tires or anything, and then you would get it out on the out by Mrs. Clark Jarvis's, and then sort of two or three of them would give you one good push, and you were on your way down towards the bottom of Lynx Lane. And because once you was going, you just couldn't, you didn't make any sudden moves because there weren't no tyres, and it just threw you off. So you would end up going down to towards the golf course. You would mount the pavement across the little entrance to the golf course and out onto the golf course, and usually end up across the old 15th. And if you was lucky, you would just come back up and then cross over, and you get up near the old 17th where it crossed the footpath. From then we would go up to the top of Castle Road, and that's when we started doing this dirt tracking on bikes. And from there we progressed, you know, Dad would have get you second hand bikes and that, and you would go up there with your pneumatic tires on then, and if you was lucky you would have knobblies on. You know, we used to have sort of 8-9 of us at a time just race around this little circuit, and spent a lot of time doing that, we did. And even to the point back in the 50s when we got into motorcycles, we took one or two of the old bikes up there, and just for keepsake we used to ride them around, but it wasn't the same as on bicycles. Also up there, we would bonfire night and that, when Dad used to have the fire back in the gardens, which most people used to have. We would have his cart, and we would collect all the all the broken down wood and that, and we would cart that back to build the fire in the garden. And of course, you would buy your fireworks out of your paper money, or out of your golf ball money. It was, you know, one or the other. Golf ball money was gained by just hunting through the bushes and finding lost balls. One or two of the boys, they would pinch them occasionally, but we never had that problem because we could almost go and pick them up to order. And then on a Sunday you had the younger fraternity used to come round, the youngsters. You always sold to them. You never went out to the elderly, you know, the people like Mr. Pinker and Bill Marshalls, because they would try to throw you off, or told you to get off, and all this, that and the other, so you didn't bother with that anymore. So you picked on the youngsters on a Sunday, and you know, for a good new ball you pick up sixpence a time. And if you couldn't find anyone, you had to go to the golf pro, Mr. Johns, and you would stand at the door in his corrugated place that he was in. And I think he only kept pennies in his till, and you hear him rustling through these pennies and that, and he would come out with, like, I don't know, 2 and 9 pence or something like that. But it was better than nothing. So and of course the golf ball money, it helped you out on numerous things. If you was off to Fratton Park, you know, for the first division football, that was after when Pompey just started to go downhill after their glory days of the turn of the 40s to the 50s. We would go down, cut across the old 17th and the old 15th, come out by the parish hall, and down through the old allotments, and down the hill and up the station. Or if you had your bike handy, you would go down to Mrs. Foster's, and that would have cost you a penny to left your bike there. And then off down to Fratton Park, and you used to go down with all the old fans. I mean, if one of the Pompey outfits were down, Arsenal, something like that, you got on the same train as them, and you just mixed amongst them, and off you went to Fratton. Out you got at Fratton, and up the road you used to go, and no hassles. in the actual, you know, Fratton Park, if you was a youngster, they always lifted you down to the front, so you got seen well. And when teams like Manchester United, Matt, used to come down, when they used to go out, you basically, going down the steps, your feet wouldn't even touch the steps, you were stuck between the crowd as you went, and you were just taken down with all these bodies. But there wasn't a safety problem or anything like that. Back to the golf course, Portsmouth used to come up and occasionally do training, and they used to play golf, and that was a good excuse for us to get out on the golf course. And then you had people like Jimmy Dickinson, Len Phillips, Johnny Gordon, Phil Gunter. They used to play serious golf, and they were good golfers. And at that time, you had Ray Crawford, Dugan. Dugan had just joined the club, and they used to just go around messing around, which was great amusement to us. And that was that used to waste a good morning, you know, and you got all your autographs, which we got to this day. And that was another good thing about the golf course. When we moved to 24 Castle Road, or two area houses, we backed onto the golf course, and we used to mostly in summer, you had if the butterflies, catching butterflies and all that type of thing. And of course, the big thing was your bird egg collection, so you was always looking for birds and that, not necessarily, just have the odd egg or whatever. Of course, when you had the odd egg, you still kept an eye on certain birds, your bullfinches, all your finches, and your hedge sparrows, which I like to call the dunnocks now, and just in case that there was a loose cuckoo's egg, because the cuckoos used to come over at quite a rate back then. And of course, I believe they lay anything up to about 25 eggs a season. So there was a chance you could bump into a cuckoo's egg, which we never did. None of us ever did find a cuckoo's nest. White throats and things like that, you'll be ball hunting, and you see this little bird whip out of the clump, and you think, hello, something's here. And you might spend half an hour all angles looking into the grass, and then you just suddenly get in that right spot, and then you just see a load of youngsters or whatever. And it was just the fact of just seeing them, and then once you've seen them, you never told none of your oppos or anything like that. You just kept your mouth, you stayed stum, and then off you went. The recreation ground was a favourite for the Skylarks. We could be up there and spend half a day, no trouble, down the bottom on the football pitches, just laying on the grass watching, because they had the tennis courts at the top in those days, and there was a lot of long grass, and we used to watch all the Skylarks. They would tweeter up there, and then suddenly they would filter down and they would land. And of course, then the problem was you had to guess which way you run or where the nest was. Again, we found about a couple of them, with the very dark olive eggs. It was just magical for us to find it. It was just that achievement. It wasn't to pinch all the eggs or rag the nest or anything. It was just that you knew he was there, so you just had to find him. And it was the same as the peewits up at like Magpie Cottages when we used to go up through there. The peewits, you knew the eggs were all over the hoed fields and that, and it was, you used to go up and down, and you would bump into the occasional one, but they were so, they blended into the background, and it was difficult, but it was when you're sort of 7, 8, it was always an achievement to find these things. occasionally we would have kept birds. I've got photos when we picked up some woodpeckers and that, and Mum took a photo of us with all the woodpeckers up our jackets and that. That was with my brother and Johnny Conduct, Roger Harrison and Jesse Jones, and Clive, you know, Buster McGraw was another one who used to be part of the gang. That type of thing. My cousin Dave up at the shoe shop, who used to be with Nan, you know, because his dad died at Dunkirk, so he was with Nan, and he used to keep jackdaws. And he used to do bike repairs and that, and of course he would strip the wheels down and take the hubs out and the little ball bearings and that, and his jackdaws, you know, they would pinch them, they would pack them, and then he had to keep them into the shed and that, and until they passed naturally, so he could get his ball bearings and that back. Then jackdaws were in trees more so than they were in chimney stacks, but now they're back into chimney stacks, and Red Hill's a very good place for them. And it always was, with the Miss Martin's field at the back of that, you know, that's where you used to get them. The woodpeckers, the best place for them was again at the upper lake, the tall pine trees. They had their holes and that up there, but there was no, most pine trees, they have little stubs out and you could climb up them just like that. But these, where these woodpeckers were, had no stubs on, and we couldn't climb up to them, we couldn't shin because they were too round, and so we never really got to them. Back to the golf course, they had a rook problem. On between the 17th and the old 15th, there was quite a rookery which was used to disturb the golfers and also a lot of the gardeners up Castle Road. So my elder brother Robin negotiated with the golf course, and they got him and one or two of the other boys in the Castle Road little gang, and they climbed the oak trees and got rid of all the rooks. You know, there was some good come out of it. Squirrels were another thing. We would spend half a day going for a bit of lunch, chasing squirrels up and down the oak trees with your catapults, and you sort of wind a few marbles up around them, and they would just freeze, and then you had to shake them up to get them going again, and you'll go all around the bottom part of that wood of between the old 16th and the 17th and the 15th, and you go round and round, and these squirrels will go all over the place, they would. Also up the 16th we would have had the tree camp, which was built by the older brothers, the elderly brothers and the elders of the sort of castle gang. Any problems, that's where you would all meet up the tree there. You had Mr. Collier over the far side of the 16th, who was consistently after us. He always had a problem with us playing around in that area, but he was of quite of an old age, so we would let him halfway get across to us, and then we would be up the tree, and then we just, because we had holes in the tree camp that you could see exactly what's going on, and we just let him wander around a little bit, and then he would go back home. You didn't give him no mouth or anything. You never sort of threw anything at him. You just got up there. He knew you were there, but there was nothing he could do about it. So, you know, that was the tree camp. And we spent many a time up there yarning or this, that, or the other. We also, coming down the 17th, the elderly boys, because we all smoked then, But you couldn't take cigarettes home because, you know, you would have been in trouble with your parents. And the elderly boys always used to appear with cigarettes. And us younger ones, because they had the paper rounds, which, you know, we used to put two and two together of how they got hold of the cigarettes. That's another story, but they always used to appear having the smoke between them and that. And we used to notice occasionally they would go across to Tom's cow shed. And because that was Tom's field, was where, what, 10 to 16 Castle Road are built now, the bungalows. You know, Mrs. Dunning, and where Mrs. Dillerstone and that lived. And there was a cow shed there, and they used to go in there, and they used to come out, you know, with all had a fag, they did. And we used to go in there, have a nose around, and we couldn't find nothing. And they always used to say, you know, well, you know, where's so and so? And they say, oh, he's gone over to the gaff, and we didn't know what this gaff was. And of course, eventually we went through the cow shed, and upturned the stones and things there, and we found there was a hole in the ground with packets of fags. And that was, we presume, the gaff. Of course, when they found out that they called it the gaff because that's fag reversed. And instead of saying they'd gone to the, you know, where the fags were, they always said that, you know, they just popped over to the gaff. So it must have been a year, at least a year to find that out. We did. Another thing with the golf course, when we used to play cricket along the old 17th, because you could see up to Mr. Collier's, and as soon as the golfers finished their putting, and then they come onto the top of the 17th, that's at the bottom of Castle Road, you could see they're about to hit off, so you just pull your stumps out of the fairway, and you just go and sit in the back of the garden, because we was just over there, and a lot of the other boyos backed onto the garden. And of course, they would drive down, and they would come through, and then we would put them out. And occasionally, there used to be a Captain Southam. He was the captain, and he had a big Morris car. And it wouldn't be the first time that he's got in his car and he's come across the golf course. How, I don't know, but he thought he was going to catch us. And of course, you would hear him start up. You would see him come across the fairway of the old 15th. He used to come across. And again, we used to just nip over the garden and just go halfway back up the garden and sit it out. And he would go back. And then occasionally he used to get a little bit smart, and we would see him leave the golf course and go down Lynx Lane. And of course, he used to go home at certain times and come back, and we knew his times. But if he went sort of mid-morning or mid-afternoon, it was inevitable that he was going to come down Lynx Lane, up Red Hill, and then up Castle Road, park his car where the start of the footpath is, the footpath that is still there to this day, and then he used to think he was going to come down and get hold of us. But as nippers, you knew exactly what was going on. You could hear his car coming up Castle Road, because there weren't that many vehicles around at the time. And again, you just legged over your fence and you just kept out of the way. And that was quite ongoing with Captain Faltham. It's the same as the greenkeepers. There used to be Mr. Bell, who came down in about 48. He was they come down from Accrington Stanley, and he had that northern accent, and quite a miserable sod he was. And then there was also Mr. Smith, who was Dick and Ern Smith, who lived in the village. It was their father. Now, when they used to cut, every morning they would do all the greens with the long, they used to swish all the dew out and then rake all the sand and that. And if you went eight ball hunting, you always see who was on duty. If Mr. Bow was on duty, you always made sure you was on the different fairway to what he was, because he would always have a moan because you know you shouldn't be there and all that old nonsense. Whereas Mr. Smith, he would actually have a little chat with you and then be on his way. Another thing with the golf course was adders, the snakes. Because we had the streams and that going through in the summer, the adders always tend to go for the water in the hot holidays. And you could be ball hunting, especially through the streams at the bottom between the old 15th and the 17th, and you're winding down through the stream, and then all of a sudden there's this adder in front of you. But the beauty of them is that they would always get out your way. And but again, they used to give you the willies, and we used to try and have a go at them, but inevitably they got into the undergrowth and they were gone. And of course, once you couldn't see them, you got your behinds out of it, because he had the advantage over you. But silly things like that. Yeah. Another thing with the golf courses, you used to pick up the old balls, the Spitfires and the old Dunlop 65s, and of course in those days they were made with two sets of rubber. A lot of the balls were badly cut, and with your fingers you could take the shucks off of them, and then you had quite a large band of rubber, which went to a small band of rubber, and you went right down to this little sack of like toothpaste in the middle, and you would do that all the way home. The art was to unpeel it so you kept a continuous stream, and you would leave this sort of, I suppose a slight exaggeration, but you'd leave a mile of a rubber band behind you and that. But it was a source of comfort to do it as you was walking home fiddling around with this golf ball. Also there we had the caddying when they had the Dupree Cup. That was one we never missed. Used to get over there on the Thursday and sit on the fence that went round the corner, and just watch all these merchants turning up who was going to play. And some of them would have come over and said, would anyone do a bit of caddying for me? And of course they picked whoever it was. But inevitably, everyone usually got around. You got around him with someone, and they used to pay you, roughly it was about 10 shillings. You used to get a nice crisp £10 note off of it, And one year I was with I picked up on Thursday and he was the finalist. So I went with him on two rounds on the Thursday, two rounds on the Friday, and then on the Saturday he was in the final. So we'd done two 18 holes, and they were level. He paid for dinner for me and all that type of thing, and then that was sudden death from the first off. And his opponent put the ball straight down the centre. He was lucky to hit it 200 yards in those days. And my fella, he hooked the ball, and he went off into the rough. And of course the other chap, we went down, went to get to our balls. The other chap, he also kept down the middle, and he got up on the green in three. And my fella took four to get up to the side of the first tee, and he was, I suppose, he was 25 yards off of, he was about 10 yards off the green, and then he had another 15 feet to the flag, and this chap, he had just entered onto the green, and he sunk his. So really, my man, he was a shot behind. Anyway, so he had lost the tournament, and he was sat at a bad lie in a ditch, and just for the hell of it, he took a number 8 out, and he chipped the ball in, and it went over the bunker onto the green, and it rolled into the hole, and you would have thought it was him that had won the championship, and that's the nearest I've come to, you know, caddying for a bloke to win the Dupree Cup, it was called then. Right. Another thing we used to do as nippers was go to the top, especially in the winter. This was mostly because you had ditches all coming down Castle Road. The ditches, a lot of people used to, my mum included, they would mow the sides of the ditch and that, and it was like little an exhibition ditches. And of course, if you were playing games down the road and in the road as you used to do, you was always told off if you got into these certain ditches. Anyway, during the spring when the ditches were pretty high, you used to go to the top of the Castle Road with, I suppose, similar to poo sticks. You would have your stick and you would just throw it in with your oppo, and you would drift all the way down Castle Road, going under all the little, the pipe sections and that, until you got to the bottom of Castle Road. And then, of course, as soon as it went under the road at Red Hill, you would nip across at the side of Mrs. Hindley's and wait for the stick to come out. And for some unknown reason, they never, ever came out. Now whether we did get our asses over there quick enough, I don't know. But they nipped the sticks. We used to rush over there, scramble down the side of the bank, because it was quite hard shoulders on it, and we used to wait for these twigs and that to come out, and they never ever used to come out. And of course, further on down, you would follow opposite where Mr. Dunnan had the butcher shop. You've got the swallow hole, which is a problem even to this day. And of course, the water used to go into this hole in the bank, and basically that was it. It just disappeared, but you didn't have the flooding. You didn't have the flooding like you do, or you have had, for obvious reasons now. And of course, Castle Road is fully piped, isn't it, because of Charles Church. Where Charles Church is, Mrs. Martin had the field. We had the walnut tree. We always done walnuts when they were in season. And of course, you know, your hands got stained for 2 or 3 weeks where you couldn't get the stain and that out. In the corner of our field, Hazeldene House, the Merediths, they had the pond where we used to do bird nesting, you know, with the coots and the moorhens. You get the odd mallard and that on there. Other pond sites would have been down behind where Bill Lewis had his place down Durrance, at the back of Mrs. Sawyer, where she lives now. We would have been out there. There's quite a large lake there, and also the small lake that is right alongside of her places. We had French's Pond down at Woodby Lane. That was another one you used to pay a visit. And then the obviously upper lake and all them, you always you kept an eye on them during the bird season. And Aldsworth Pond was another favourite. And and Aldsworth Pond was where the elder boys were all, for the egg collection, they always wanted a swan's egg. And you had the swans down on Aldsworth Pond. And right or wrong, we was under instructions from the elders of the group that we was going to go and break down this bush and all that, and we was going to make a road out to this swan's nest, which is what we'd done. It took about half a day. The swans kept paying us a visit, and they're quite nasty when they want to be. Anyway, the last 10 feet, they put down the rest of the bushes. They were in water, and they laid out in a, you know, holding one another, and they got one of the swan's eggs. Of course, we was up and gone. We knew it was wrong, but that was one of the main, with bird eggs, that was the main thing. Of course, then it had to be drilled, and of course you used to blow them, didn't you? But funny enough, there's vehicles going past and that, and no one ever come near you. No one went near you. They only took the one egg. There was two there at the time. They left the other one, because once I got that one, it was mission accomplished, and out you got. And then we was on our bikes back home, you know. Late 40s and turn of the 50s, Dad, who used to work on the gas company before the war, then he done service in the war, and then when he came out, he went on the Portsmouth Corporation, and he used to do the gas lights around Rowlands, used to service them, and we used to go round with him to turn them on, or we, you know, used to do it once a day, you would turn them on. And at a later date, turn of the 50s, they've become automatic. They would have been on a timer. So all you had to do was make sure that the mantles were in good shape. And of course, the mantles were a little, in the box, there was this little soft sack, very ghostly white it was. And of course, you had to take it out the box. And I suppose it's like handling a halogen bulb. If you touched it in certain places, it broke. And of course, Dad, who was in a bad way through the war, he had a lot of ulcers and that on his toes and coming up his legs. And he used to go up the ladder, and we used to hand these mantles to him if they were gone. And that was another thing we used to do with him, you know, between the brothers and the sisters. He lost his leg in 1950, and my cousin Dave helped him out and took over for a while. And of course, before Dad done it, Tanner King, who used to live at Oakfield up Castle Road, between number 10 and one council houses, he used to do it, and he used to be the sidesman up at the church. And after Dad had finished with it, because he had his leg off through these ulcers and that, he lost his leg above the knee, and Mr. Freeman took over, which is, to this day, is Marjorie Harvey's, the councillor who's just got on, her father, he took over from Dad. Also with Dad, as he was a plumber, we used to do the repair the pipes in the winter at the pavilion when they in the cold winters there was having burst pipes every so often. So we used to come down to Mr. Rook, who was Kath Rook's father, who was opposite the parish hall, used to collect the keys, and then we used to go up to the wreck. And we used to hold the candles. Dad used to light the candles, and we had to hold the candles so because if it was lead pipes, he had to wipe the joints and that, you know, because he had a blow lamp. So really, that kept us a bit half warm, because we always had the blow lamp going, or the copper pipe, whichever was what was what. So that's another thing we used to do with Dad. The allotment just behind where Mr. Rook was. Dad had an allotment. It was about the eighth one in, which was behind the allotment, behind the pavilion, which was not far from where we're sat now. It can't be. And of course, after he lost his leg, he got a hater with a Jap engine, cultivator. And of course, he used to operate the.